I was never a huge fan of Survivor. Raise your hand if it was something you enjoyed. I've never seen much of it. I think I saw the very last episode of the first season. It was fascinating, but I just never made it part of my routine. But I did remember its catchphrase, which was outwit, outplay, outlast. I think we tend to ignore in life that last word, outlast. Sometimes it is the acme of excellence and great leadership just to outlast your foes, just to outlast one's rivals and survive through difficulties. We would do wise, I think, in this period of extreme difficulty, of extreme historic change and challenge, to remember that sometimes outlasting is a kind of excellence, and to set our sights modestly. When Brad Artson began as a rabbi in the 80s in Orange County, churches and synagogues were exploding. The pulpit that he joined started at about 200, 250 families, and within a decade had grown to 600 families. When we were students of his, we all were impressed by that achievement. But the truth was, when we entered the rabbinate, times had changed. Synagogues, churches, ecclesiastical organizations were shrinking, if not even fading and dying. So when I had a conversation with him some years into my work, I bemoaned my inability or seeming inability to grow the synagogue. And he said, surviving right now is incredible. Paying your bills, having happy members, having a building whose doors are open, those are not always easy things to do. And as the Talmud would say, kal vachomer, all the more so during this epidemic. We are living through a time of great chaos, change, frustration, exhaustion. There are people in healthcare and in other industries who have quit their jobs, who have burned out, who have psychological breaks, and sometimes just remaining sane is a very powerful achievement. Our tradition teaches us a long heritage of resilience. If nothing else, we as Jews have been resilient through the vicissitudes of history, the cruelties of leaders, the difficulties of times and places. So we have a lot to learn from our tradition. More on that on Yom Kippur. But for now, I want to refer you to one of our medieval moralists, Bache ibn Pekuda, writing on this week's Parsha, or writing about in connection with this week's Parsha, that the difference between the service of God and secular activities in this world regarding trust in God is as follows. For secular matters, it was not ever revealed to us which one of all the means is best and most beneficial for us, nor the ways in which some course is more harmful or worse than other courses. We don't know which particular trade is best suited for us, most fitting for us in obtaining money, preserving health, and for general well-being. Nor do we know which business sector, which journey to undertake, or which other worldly endeavors will be successful. And the truth is that the primary spiritual act of human life, one of the primary spiritual goals of Jewish development, is recognizing the limits of our control. We might think and we might wish that we had more control than we do, but an insight of Judaism, an insight of most faiths, an insight even of 12-step and psychotherapy is that human control is much more constrained than we'd like to admit. We don't know the outcomes of our actions. We can't know what will happen with Delta, with Heskamuna synagogue, with Knoxville, with mu variants and other, God forbid, but most likely even new pandemics in our lifetimes. And that's terrifying. Let's just be honest. It's heartbreaking and scary and should fill us with concern. That's normal. I want to be really honest that it's okay to feel uncertain. It's okay to feel on the edge of one's seat and to take time sometimes just to sit slowly and absorb and to refresh. It is, I think I understood from the beginning of all this, a marathon and not a sprint. There were colleagues who were suddenly working 50 to 60 to 70 hours a week at the beginning of this, and I said, this isn't going to be just 1 or 3 weeks. And now we're well into year two. But some things don't change. Sometimes it's good to look out at the sky and the clouds, the streets, the cars, the trees, the grasses, and remember, as our ancestor Isaac did, that the grasses of the field are a kind of prayer, and the heavens and the earth are firm, at least in our lifetime. Maybe in billions of years things change, but not today. In the parasha, God says, Ha'idoti bachem hayom, et ha'shamayim ve'et ha'aretz, ha'chayim ve'amavet, ve'natati levenecha bracha v'klala v'charta v'chayim, man tichye v'tah zarecha. I call to witness, I call to attest today the heavens and the earth, life and death, and I give before you, give to you, blessing and or curse. So choose life in order that you may live and your descendants may thrive. Rashi says the whole point of that, and I think it's almost self-evident, is that the earth and the heavens, at least as we know them, as our ancestors knew them, are solid, are fixed, are reliable lodestars in one's life. Rashi puts in the words of the Holy Blessed One of God, saying to Israel, look at the heavens, which I've created to be at your service. Have they perhaps ever changed their character? I just love this narration. Has the orb of the sun perhaps ever failed to rise in the east and to give light to the whole world? I guess he'd never seen a solar eclipse and been terrified by that, as many ancient people were. Look at the earth, which I created to be at your service. Has it perhaps ever changed its character? Have you perhaps sown it and it did not bring forth? This is great. Or have you sown wheat and it brought forth barley? Ha'olam noheg k'minhago is the phrase. The world goes on according to its custom. The world is managed according to such management. We should take stock and take comfort in that. That there's a power to knowing that short of a solar eclipse, the sun rises at its appointed time. It travels across the sky, say the psalmists, and lands in its appointed place. Of course, doesn't land, but that's the way they understood it. And that good things end, but also bad things end. Gam ze yavor, this too shall pass. I'm not big into eschatology, the discussion of end times, the discussion of the coming of the Messiah or the Messianic age, but Isaiah was. Certainly in this parasha, there's a lot of subject of the deliverer. That's a word that Isaiah uses frequently in the parsha. And Maimonides in his Mishneh Torah describes what that end time may look like, what that renewal of Israelite and godly sovereignty over our world may be. There's a deep and powerful understanding of the replacement of the vicissitudes of life with shalom, with wholeness and completeness. And that God desires us to participate in that building of faith and a future world better than the one we live in. There's a place in Georgia called Hefzibah. For a while, it was where my accountant lived. And it comes from this week's parsha. Literally, it means, I desired of it. I desired of you and your spirits and the Israelite people. God is desirous of us. In participating in difficult times and making amends for the world, doing tikkunim, little repairs. We use that word, tikkun olam. I've never actually liked it. It's too broad. It's too much of a, quote, social justice warrior kind of word. But really, the origin of it was tikkunim, little repairs, little painting over the flaws of creation, little fixes for the rudenesses of everyday life. And that we can do, even in these moments of perhaps for some of us, the greatest distress we've known. And God is there in that. God participates in the act of redemption. God joins us in the difficulties of the moment. God holds us in God's holy hand and under God's wings. To use the words of the psalmists. And in this week's parasha, chapter 30, verse 3, Vishav Adonai Elohecha et shvutecha rihamecha vishav. V'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim asher hefitzta, hefitzcha, Adonai lecha shama. I'm not going to translate too much because that's the point of it. It's an odd verb, vishav, which sounds like God is returning to us in mercy, but it's an odd choice of words, notes Rashi, because the real word should be the heshiv, God will bring us back. But vishav roughly means God will come back. Not the right word. Maybe to indicate that God will come back to us at a time of estrangement. But what Rashi says is, in quoting earlier sources, our sages learn from this that the divine presence resides among Israel and all humankind, as it were, in the misery of exile. And when the Jews are redeemed, and I would extend to the whole of the human race, the whole of humankind, and even this world, God speaks of it as God's own redemption. God returns God's self among the exiles. Another interpretation Rashi offers is that the day on which Israel's exiles will be gathered is so monumental and difficult that as though God, God's self, must literally take each individual person with God's very hands out of the place. God is with us now. God is luring us forward out of this difficulty. God is holding us in God's hands. And sometimes patience and faith is what we need to muster. Sometimes a modicum of self-care through the difficulty, time for prayer, time to eat slowly with family, time to watch the birds, time to walk, time to read, is the best we can do, is what we have to do, is what we must do, is the mitzvah of the moment, is the way in which we care for God's created world by caring for ourselves. In a midrash on this week's parasha, sages put in the words of the Holy Blessed One in God's mouth, if you read the Torah, you do a good deed for the world. For were it not for the Torah, the world would long ago have been reduced to its primeval state of waste and desolation. That's it, right? That's what we're learning. Is it humankind and climate and the body politic and culture are fragile things? And it's up to each of you, all 28 people on this Zoom call, all of us in our congregation, all of us in the broader community and city, to participate. The Midrash says to read the Torah, but really what that means is to read oneself and to understand what God is seeking from us and to go deeper. This is an incredible moment to dig deeper than we ever knew how. An incredible time to be better, to be more righteous, to be more whole. Challenge can bring out the best in us. It can also crush us, but the trick is, I think, to go back to Brad Artson and Survivor, is to outlast and to understand that that is sometimes the acme of success. And our tradition of 3+ some odd millennia is a tradition of outlasting. The heritage of resilience and a monument to the ways in which challenge can refine our spirits. That's the goal of the day.